head was aching abominably, but when he and Kraftstein had examined it, they pronounced it satisfactory. From their point of view, Dakota had laid his cuts exactly, and provided the wounds were left open, they would quickly heal into excellent scars, Kraftstein assured me. "Give you a most distinguished appearance," says Rudy. "All the little Prussian girls will be fluttering for you." I was too sick and shocked even to curse at him. The pain seemed to be searing into my brain, and I was half swooning as Kraftstein bandaged my skull, and the pair of them supported me upstairs and laid me down on my bed. The last thing I heard before I slipped into unconsciousness was Rudy saying that it'd be best if my highness rested for a while, and I remember thinking it odd that he'd slipped out of his play-actor's role for a while and then back into it. That was my only experience of Schlager play, and it was one too many. But it taught me something, and that was a fearful respect for Otto Bismarck and his ruffians. If they were capable of that kind of cold-blooded mutilation, then there was nothing they wouldn't do. From that moment I put all thought of trying to escape from Schönhausen out of my mind. I hadn't the game for it. As to the scars, they healed quickly under Kraftstein's care. I'll carry them to my grave, one close to my right ear, the other slightly higher, but just visible now that my hair is thinner. Neither is disfiguring, fortunately. Indeed, as Rudy observed, there is something quite dashing romantic about them. They've been worth a couple of campaigns, I often think, in giving people the wrong impression of my character. They hurt most damnably for a couple of days, though, during which I kept in my room. That was all the convalescence they'd allow me, for they were in a great sweat to begin what Rudy was pleased to call my princely education. This consisted of some of the hardest brain work I've ever had in my life. For a solid month, every waking hour, I lived, talked, walked, ate, and drank Prince Carl Gustav, until I could have screamed at the thought of him, and sometimes did. At its worst, it amounted to grueling mental torture. But in recalling it now, I have to admit that it was brilliantly done. I wouldn't have believed it possible, but the three of them, Rudy, Kraftstein, and Bersonin, came as close as one humanly could to turning me into another person. They did it subtly and persistently by pretending from the first that I was Carl Gustav, and spending hour after hour reminding me about myself. I suppose to approach the thing in any other way would have been useless, for it would have been constant admission of the imposture, and what an idiot harebrained scheme it was. They took me through that Danish bastard's life 100 times, from the cradle upwards, until I swear I must have known more about him than he did himself. His childhood ailments, his relatives, his ancestors, his tutors, his homes, his playmates, his education, his likes, his dislikes, his habits. It wasn't a call of nature that he'd answered in 20 years that I wasn't letter perfect in by the time they'd done. Hour after hour, day after day, they had me sitting at that long table while they poured fact after fact into me. What food he liked, what pets he had had, what he read, what colour his sister's eyes were, what nursery name his governess had called him, Tutti, of all things, how long he'd lived at Heidelberg, what his musical tastes were. Fra Diavolo, by one Auber, had apparently impressed him, and he was forever whistling an air from it. It says something for their teaching that I've whistled it off and on for 50 years now. Where they'd got all their information, God only knows. But they had 2 huge folders of papers and drawings which seemed to contain everything he'd ever done and all that was known about him. I couldn't tell you my own grandmother's Christian name, but God help me, I know that Carl Gustav's great-uncle's mastiff was called Ragnar, and he lived to be 23. "And what was your Highness's favourite game when you were little?" Rudy would ask. "Playing at sailors," I would reply. "What was the English ship you boasted to your mothers you had captured at Copenhagen?"
"The Agamemnon."
"How did you come to capture it?" "How the blazes do I know? I was only 3, wasn't I? I can't remember." "You have been told it was stuck in a mud bank. In your infant reenactment, you covered yourself in mud in a garden pond. Don't you remember?"